Hi, everyone. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. It is Monday, April 15th, 2024, the seventh day of Nisan, 5784. And naturally, a week before Pesach, I find myself sitting near the pool at the King David Hotel in Jerusalem with nothing to do. Not true. I'm here with Tuvia Tenenbaum and his lovely wife, Issy, and we're going to be talking about his new book in a minute. But before we get into his new book, I just have to say something about what happened here 2 days ago. Saturday night was a wild night. We were all, as everyone knows, anticipating, like they gave us a lot of lead time that the enemy was going to try and kill us from Iran and from their friends. And it was I keep using the word surreal, or in Hebrew, hazui, and that's just going to keep coming up. And so I didn't go to sleep. The rest of my family went to sleep. I was sitting on the couch. First, I got a warning on my phone that the area in the Shomron where my daughter lives was under attack. So I was picturing her and shepherding her children into their safe space. Then I heard some booms. And then I got a panicked phone call from one of my daughters who lives in Tel Aviv by herself. She wasn't doing very well. And then we got the sirens where I live in Efrat. So I went and got everybody up, and we went into the safe room and spent like 15 minutes, came out, saw some fireworks in the sky, and then everyone else went back to sleep, and I kind of dozed on the couch the rest of the night. And it was really only as the news started trickling out that we realized what a major miracle it was. I don't want to go into all the politics. I mean, we can, but that's for a different show. And how I think a lot of this was set up. It was a form of theater. But you have plenty of pundits and people to listen to their podcasts about that. But just on a personal level, if only one of those missiles had hit a building, we could have easily had 150, 200, or even more dead Israelis, and it would have been a whole other day today. I definitely wouldn't have been sitting by the pool at the King David about to conduct an interview. And it really feels like it was an open miracle, trying to sit with that. I don't know how many people understand that and how it could have gone in very, very different ways. So because it's the week before Passover, and the whole name comes from the fact that in Egypt we painted our doors with blood so that the angel of death would pass over our houses. So it seems like he passed over the country. Very strange experience. It's going to take me a while to really kind of put that in with all the other crazy experiences that I've had since I moved to this amazing and crazy country 36 years ago. But now to the interview of today. So, Tuvia Tenenbaum, back in Israel again. So nice to see you and to see you again.
So nice to see you, Eve. You're a wonderful person. You're an amazing person, and you look like only 19.
So Tuvia's eyesight is not doing as well as we would hope, but thank you anyhow. He's
I'm serious. Yeah, I'm serious.
Thank you.
I needed that. My nails went in cleaning for Passover, but I'm trying to keep the rest of it together. Anyhow, this is not the first time that I've interviewed Tuvia. He's put out a series of books over the years, one more interesting and provocative than the next. And this last one, Careful, Beauty's Ahead, just came out in English. As a matter of fact, if those of you who are in or near Jerusalem on Wednesday night, the 17th, there's going to be the official launch at the Begin Center at 7:30 p.m. And the book itself will be coming out in the United States. Right now in English, it's only available in Israel. So I got to have an advanced copy, got to read it. And the subtitle, of course, is My Year with the Ultra Orthodox. So tell us, Tuvia, why in many ways, perhaps as I read it, this book is more personal for you than some of the other books that you've written, because this is where you started off your childhood, was in the ultra-Orthodox world.
I mean, every book is personal. I mean, when you write a book and you put your persona in it, and every one of them is personal. In this book, Careful Beauty Said, which will be, by the way, available in the United States in a couple of weeks or so, this book is from what you call personal, because I was born in the ultra-Orthodox world. My father was a rabbi, Rosh Yeshiva. I'm a great-grandson of the Radziner Rebbe. My early education was Haredi. And so it was interesting, you know. I remembered Mea Shearim from the time I was a very young man. I studied there. And Yes, so it has something personal in it from that perspective, and comparing what happened in those days to what happened the Haredi community today and the Haredi community then. And we spent, my wife and I, Hizi and myself, we spent over a year in Meir Shearim. I did not expect it to be so beautiful and so wonderful and so warm. Everybody warned me not to live there. Including Haredim, they told me horrible things about the Haredi Jews in Meir Shearim. I mean, Meir Shearim was a base. I mean, it's like we went all over Israel. I mean, it's like it's the Haredim in Israel. The book is about the Haredim in Israel, but the base was Meir Shearim. And even though I have been forewarned that they would throw stones at me and scream at me and do all kinds of things, the point is, this is not what happened. I was welcome. We were welcomed very well. We spent a long time together with them. Friday night, Shabbos morning, Shabbat mornings, or afternoons. They invited us. They came to visit us. We were in their homes, and of course, every tish that you can imagine. I visited every tish possible.
Explain what a tish is.
A tish is something that happens usually later at night on a Friday. On Friday night, on Lel Shabbat, the tish happens, and during the tish, they are like, depending on the Hasidah, some of them are small, some of them are large. You have hundreds or thousands of Hasidim on bleachers, you know, around the Rebbe, and the Rebbe makes a blessing and eats something, and everybody gets a shiraim, and then the Rebbe sings, and the Rebbe says oi, and you have hundreds or thousands of people saying oi, and the Rebbe said ba, and all the Hasidim say ba, and the Rebbe said oi, 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 and everybody says oi, 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 and they say it's like an amazing, 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 beautiful experience. And so when it is him, and luckily I also got to interview Rebbes, they agreed to be interviewed by me. Usually it doesn't happen, as far as I understand. They never give interviews to the media, but for some reason they gave me interviews, maybe because I'm fat.
Wait, did they know you were there as a journalist?
Of course. Of course. I mean, what was surprising to me, I mean, I did not know how to introduce myself over there, but on the first day already, when we were like in the Kasbah of Meir Shearim, in the Shuk, in the middle of the middle, in the first half an hour already, five people approached me to tell me in Yiddish, you know, approached me in Yiddish, Reb Tuvi Voseirtzich, Reb Tuvi Adai Bichlach, Chleizen Abichlach, Awawalech Abichlach, basically, Tuvia, are you? Tuvia, you are, your books, we love your books. We went, for example, to one place told us Avraham Mitzchak, one of the most extreme of the extreme, as they call it, and we just said, it was Friday night, and I just sat down, and the guy said, the guy came to me, one of the Haredim, he said, in Yiddish, of course, he said, Tuvia, very nice that you came. What an important Jew to have between us. Tell me something. Are you going to do to us what you did to the Americans? So it's like, at that point...
So explain what that means.
Because referring to the book, The Lies They Tell, the book that yours truly wrote about America, and presenting America is basically... on the verge of the worst anti-Semitism. I mean, this is a book that was written a few years ago. Basically,
what a relief now to know that it's not on the verge anymore.
Yeah, I'm on the verge of, meaning that on the verge of exploding. I mean, it was anti-Semitic. I mean, when the book came out, a lot of people criticized me. How can you say it about America? America is like the most beautiful country in the world. Bim, bam, boom. Now, what's the difference between now and then? That on the verge of exploding, I mean, being public. But there is nothing new in America. It was anti-Semitic before, and it's anti-Semitic now. Sadly, that's the reality. So, anyway, so I hope you don't do to us what you do to the Americans. Mm-hmm. So, basically, that's when I learned in the first few days already that this Haredim, unlike in my time, they actually read books that are not only Haredi books, are not only religious books, they read even books of yours truly, which was amazing. Some of them even quoted to me on page 135, line 27, whatever, Musik mit Vash, sweeter than any. I couldn't believe it. So, yes.
In what language did they read your books?
In Hebrew. In Hebrew.
Because if I'm already bringing up language, you make that point, and I think it's a very important point, that one of the reasons that you were able to really I would say even start off with a feeling of trust on their part is because you speak fluent Yiddish, which is the language they were speaking to you in.
Yeah, and I mean that helps a lot if you speak Yiddish. I mean, one of the reasons you have so much and so many research and articles and books about Haredim that the common denominator of them, almost all of them, is that they are negative about the Haredim is because these people, these journalists, these writers, they come to Meir Shorim or wherever it is, stay there for half an hour, and then they write horrible books from, you know, really bad, bad books about the Haredi world. But if you understand Yiddish, you understand the nuances, you understand the mentality, you understand, it's a totally different world, if you understand. I remember one time I asked some of them, I said, how come you welcomed me so well? Invite me to your homes? I mean, it's like, hello. And come to visit. And he said, the answer was, when you speak Yiddish to us, it's not you talking to us, it's your grandpa talking to our grandpa. And that was an amazing thing. I got goosebumps when I heard it. So, yes, by the end of the day, the book is not a propaganda about the Haredim, but I think it's the most positive books written about the Haredim by a non-Haredi since the establishment of the State of Israel, at least.
Wow, that's saying something. And I would possibly agree with you because most of definitely the things that come out about Haredim are negative, and especially now in terms of doing the army and all of that, how it's become politicized. But you left the Haredi world. So a couple of questions. One is, was there any animosity that you had going in, and perhaps what you were worried about them not accepting you, perhaps is a little internal projection on there. And the other thing is, were they upset with you? Because, you know, did they feel that you betrayed that lifestyle by leaving?
I did not have any animosity. I know the stories, the horrible stories that people tell when they left the Haredi hall. I did not have any animosity. I love them. I mean, and why shouldn't I have? I mean, when I was a young man, I mean, I skipped five grades when I finished the Yeshiva Gdoile, as they say, you know, the university. I was less than 15 years of age, and they already tried to introduce me to the, made sure that I am, everybody's tried to get me to be his son-in-law.
I mean, you were the rising star of the ultra-Orthodox world.
Whatever you call it, you know. But yeah, I mean, even later on, when I remember when I was 17, 18, and I had a shidduchim, you know, and
matchmakers were coming to you.
No, shidduchim. I actually dated, and I'll never forget these girls that I dated. She had a diamond, you know, a pure diamond, in the size almost of a cigarette box. it was huge. And so, why should I feel bad about them? She treated me like a prince or like a king or whatever you want. I left because I did not believe that what they believe. I mean, I do not believe that they are right in different things. I did not believe in few of the things. And I could prove it. I proved it from the Talmud. I proved it from the Poskim. And those days, I knew my stuff. So I could prove it. I came to my rabbis and I put like books upon books to prove my point. And they could not answer.
They still can't answer. That's one of the themes through the books. You ask them questions, and they say it right. It says it somewhere.
Yeah, they still can't answer. They still cannot answer a lot of the things. They still cannot answer, and you know. But between you and me, I mean, how many people in the outside world? I mean, it's like, yeah, I'm critical of them. I'm not only positive. I'm also critical at some point. I'm critical of them of following the rabbis. Like, if there is no Torah to follow, I mean, it's like just they're following the rabbi all the time. But look. The Hasidim followed the Rebbe who is 80, 90 years old, okay, without asking questions. The outside world, the progressive world, and the liberal world, they follow a teenager, you know, by...
On TikTok or something.
You know, whatever, not just on TikTok, you know, on Thunberg, you know, Greta, for example, for many years. Mm-hmm. They have been followed her for God knows what. What does she know about climate change? What degrees does she have in climate change? In climate, what degrees does she have in any science? What degrees of university does she have? Can she even sit and study for 5 minutes? Does she? I mean, it's like, she's nothing. I mean, it's like, we all follow. I mean, it's not the only community that follows, you know, it's like, I mean, look at New York now. I mean, New York now, everybody has to say how much they love Palestinians, you know, and not to say everybody, it's like, I cannot if I talk to a girl, I cannot look from her chin down because I'm a potential rapist if I do that. I mean, it's like, I mean, look at the world we are today. You know, it's like before you meet a person in New York, you have all these rules. You have to know if that person prefers to be called he, she, they, me, shmu, pois, and all this gender thing, all these machinations that you have today in the world. I mean, the world is more sexually restrictive in the Upper East Side of Manhattan in New York than in Meir Shorim. That I can tell you from personal experience. You know, I mean, it's like, so to be fair to them, with all my criticism of them, you know, it's, they are not the only ones. You know, are there some people who are violent? Yes. Show me a community there are no violent people in there. Show me a university in America today there are not violent people. I can show you a president of universities who are violent, especially verbal. I mean, it's like, this is not, So I have criticism, but it's not more criticism than I have about any other society. Mm-hmm. So, but it's not a propaganda book. But by the end of the day, I think, as my neighbor, a Hasidic Jew, my neighbor said to me after he read the book, Yedra Vort a Pearl, every word a pearl. You know, this is, you know, they love it. They are the ones who made the book. And it's the first week. I mean, I had bestsellers in Israel before, quite a few, thank God. But this one, it became a bestseller in the first week. It just came out. Who made it the first week? The Haredi. So yes. So it's a different book about the Haredi world. But it's not only about the Haredi world. It's also a book that, you know, asks questions. What is Judaism? What is faith? What is God? Why we say Hashem? Why we say the name instead of saying the name of God? I mean, it's like all this kind. It deals with many issues of the religious world, of Judaism, of continuity for thousands of years. What does it mean? You know,
and it Zionism also comes up in there. They don't consider the Zionists to be Jews.
Yeah, and it also asks the main questions, the most important question: did Moshe Rabbeinu, the Moses, the lawgiver, did he wear shtreimel or not? I mean, it's very important to know. It's very important. And Tzipora, his wife, you know, did she wear a tichel or a shaitel or whatever? It's very. This is a very important question. Don't neglect to think that. You know.
Meaning, did our biblical figures dress like the ultra-Orthodox of today? But you know what? You'll see that in every religion. Like when I've gone and I've seen Christian art. So Jesus looks like whatever country you're in. You know, if you're in Sweden, he looks Swedish. And
But that's the question. Is did Moshe Rabbeinu wear a shtreimel? I mean, did Moshe Rabbeinu have chant in the morning of Shabbos? Yeah. You know, what kind of kugel did he prefer?
You definitely like their food.
Kugel or lakshan kugel. I mean, it's like noodle kugel or potato kugel. Yeah. So all these questions are explored also in depth, you know. So, yeah, so it's about the culture. It's about many other things. And
whoops, he's turning off his phone. Okay.
Okay.
You think this man had never done an interview before. Seriously.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Because most of the people don't have my number here, so I didn't expect it would be called... I usually go with a different number. Okay, anyway.
But how about so you said, like at the Tisch, for example, that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people sometimes. But people, you mean men. So that whole idea of the, you can call it modesty, you can call it, some people would say women are second class.
People are only men. I mean, it's 50% men and 50% women. I mean, it's that's what it is. I mean, normally that's what it is. I mean, the society divides.
No, but I'm saying at the public events.
The public events depends. So you have public events for women too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are no public events only for men. I mean, and the Ebers as Noshim, the Ebers as Noshim, or the women can be. I mean, and that's in every Orthodox, even in modern Orthodox, you have the division of where they pray, you know. And by the way, I mean, go to your average mosque, what do you say? Like today, the atheist world, you know, they really love the Muslims, they really love Quran, they think this Quran is the... They don't believe in God, but they believe in Muhammad. For some reason, I don't know why. I mean, it's like, also criticize the Orthodox Jews, how come they don't mix? I mean, criticize the mosque, why they don't mix men and women, I want to see you. You know?
Well, what comes out is, first of all, how you see how the women are very beautiful and dress nicely, they're not, and also... That they're treated nicely in the main, from what you saw.
Yes, they're treated very nicely. This is what I saw. And and I think they're the most beautiful women on the planet. I mean, I'm sorry to say that. I mean, also the men. I mean, especially the rabaralach with the golden things. I mean, clothes make a person. You have to understand that clothes make a person. And the nicer you dress, you know, the nicer you look. everyone. I mean, it's like, you know, put me with dirty clothes, I look ugly and stinking. I mean, it's like, put me with a nice clothes, put me like a king, you know, like Charles, and I look very nice.
Well, most people walk around now looking like they're either going to the gym or just came from the gym.
Exactly. I mean, today, people look like, they look like animals with some piece of clothes on them. And the Hasidim look, the Haredim, you know, they look like beautiful, especially on Shabbat, I mean, and the women look like, you know, beauty queens, every one of them. I mean, put them on Fox News or on MSNBC and you say, ah, so beautiful, how did you get such beautiful ladies to present the news for you? I mean, yes, but that's a fact. I mean, there's nothing you can do. You know.
And most of them have many children, but live fairly modestly. They don't have big homes. Definitely not in Mea Shearim or in Bnei Brak.
Yeah, I mean, if you have many children, it's very easy. It's much easier to raise 10 children than to raise one or two. You have to raise one. One or two, the kids are the Hitlers of the house. Sorry, they are like the Nazis. They are terror. You know, you have to do everything. You have to go after them. You have to clean them. They tell you what to do. You go to visit any family, not with one kid or two. The whole house is about the kids, you know. And the kid decides everything what to do. Once they go to sleep, once they go to eat, where they go, where they are going to be Shabbat, where they are going to be, whatever it is. You go to Haredi, a four-year-old already goes on the street and buys milk or whatever by himself and goes for grocery by himself, you know. And the six-year-old takes the three-year-old, you know, in the trolley, you know, and walks on the street. I mean, it's like, they help each other, you know, so the kids and every house, you know, because you have all these children, every house is like a kingdom by itself, you know, and on Shabbat, you know, the kids are dressed, every family, they have the kind of the way they are dressed, and everybody is dressed like beautifully. I mean, they're dressed similarly, the same kind. If it's pink, everybody is dressed pink. If it's black, everybody's dressed. If it's brown, everybody is dressed brown. If it's gold, all the kids are dressed gold.
As someone who raised seven children, it's easier to do the laundry when everything is the same color. I'll just tell you that afterwards.
And everything is easier. I mean, it's like you have to prepare Shabbat. Yeah, it's not, you know, when the kids, like when I come to the Haredim, I come to the home, you know, and you have 10 kids and they stand beautifully, and you know, Friday night, you know, after Ma'arib, after the service, and they are at home, and they stand beautifully and say, good Shabbos. You know, they don't yell and they don't scream and they don't throw things, you know, and they don't tell their parents what their parents should give them or not give them. They don't tell the parents what they should do. And you go to one or two-year-olds, you know, if you have only one or two kids in their family, the children are telling the parents what to do. And today, especially, we told them a shigasan of today, of the education today, you have to be very careful with your kids. You have to tell them what you want. You have to raise everybody as a Jap. There are no Japs in Mea Shearim. I mean, this is beautiful.
Jap meaning Jewish American princess.
Yeah,
You
know, it's like a Ge'anim. It's like Japs. It's Eloners. You know, it's like, you know, go, I'll take you to.
She's not a Jap. That's what I can say. And not because she's sitting on the other side of me. I could say she's for sure not like that. She's not.
I know Japs. I dated them, you know.
You make really a large contribution, I think, and also how you speak about their chesed, which, how would we translate chesed into English? The world of caring, of loving kindness, of charity. Nobody falls there. There's soup kitchens.
There's no Friday nights, you know, there is no family who will not have food on the table. And any food they want, I mean, we told the meals, we told the dishes, we told the things, you know, the tables will be full of food. And if you are poor and you don't have anything, you cannot afford it, don't worry. Somebody at 4 o'clock in the morning on Friday, you know, before Shabbat, somebody at 4 o'clock in the morning will drop boxes or whatever.
Right.
Bags.
Right, modestly, so not to embarrass you.
Not to embarrass you that you have been. And you sit on Shabbat and you see all the food. It's like everybody has more than enough. They care for each other in an amazing way. I mean, this is amazing.
That is a very powerful reason to stay in the community, because I'm sure, you know, whether they told you or not, or whether you, someone like yourself, for example, who's wants to make a break with the community, but that knowing that you really have a whole tribe behind you has to make it very difficult, even if you have intellectual doubts over their way of life.
Yeah. No question about it. I mean, yeah, the social thing is huge. I mean, yeah, and they help each other and in a tremendous way. And basically, they're very nice people. I mean, it's a community that's raised on values, you know, on principles. And one of the main principles is to help each other. I mean, it's like, even lend money without interest or all kinds of, you know, it's like everything.
But since
you don't have a computer, there are places, you know, you can get a computer. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like you can get anything. I mean, yes.
But you didn't write this book in Brooklyn. You wrote this book specifically about ultra-Orthodox in Israel. So what is their relationship with the state?
I mean, from the state, in my experience, I mean, the Haredim over there are less of believers. It's basically social. It's not as much belief. You know, here it's much more of a belief. You know, mm-hmm. I met many Hasidim in Haredim in New York or whatever, in, you know, outside of Israel, who are Haredim just because the business needs there. You know, it's like I have a real estate company, and where am I going to go? As one said to me, I'm going to go out and start from all over. All my contacts are in the Haredi world. All my contacts. So. Do you believe in God? No, I don't believe in God. You know, stuff like that, you know, but I am Haredi. You know, it's like that you see much more often in the United States, for example, than in Israel. Israelis are much more honest, much more truthful to the teaching of the Haredi world.
It's a less cynical kind of way of doing
less
it.
Less cynical. And the main thing, especially the Hasidic part, which the main thing is very what you call Jewish humor. Jewish humor exists in the Hasidic world, the Haredi world, does not exist outside of it. I mean, the establishment of the State of Israel was a great thing, but with the establishment of the State of Israel, we killed humor. I mean, Israeli society is not funny. I mean, forget it. They are anything but funny. They can be macho, they can be schmacho, they can be puchki, they can be puchki, they can be
foul. I'll have to take you to some comedy shows. We have some great Israeli
comedians. There are some comedy shows, but the society itself is not funny. The society itself, you talk to people, you don't laugh. You know, it's like you are, unless they tell you a joke. You know, it's like, but that's normally like in any country. There are people who are funny, but the society itself is not funny. In Moshulam, I spent every day, from the day I wake up, I walk on the street until the day is over, I find myself laughing like crazy. They are funny people. That's the Jewish humor. The Jewish humor that exists and subsides in the Galician Yiddish. The Litvakas.
I was going to say, maybe it's the Yiddish.
The Yiddish, but the Galician Yiddish, the Hasidic Yiddish, because the other Yiddish, which is not that much spoken, because in most of the Litvish yeshivas teach in Hebrew, they don't even speak Yiddish. So, but the ones who speak Yiddish in the Litvish yeshivas, it's much more like German. I mean, it's harsh. The Hasidic, which is speak Galician Yiddish, it's funny. It's like everything is funny in it. I mean, it's like amazingly funny. You have to understand it. It's not the Yiddish of the Yiddish theater, for example. The Yiddish theater is closer to the Litvish theater, Litvish Yiddish. Galician Yiddish is funny. You see, people are funny, people are laughing, people are enjoying life, no matter how much money they have or how much money they don't have, they are enjoying life. And that's amazing. And that's amazing. Yeah,
it's a beautiful. You definitely enjoyed their food.
Oh, yeah, I like the food very, very much.
Maybe, could it be because it was some nostalgic for you? I was just talking to my husband, who never had grandparents, about the certain things that I was going to make for Passover, and they're a pain in the neck, but my grandchildren like them. And there's definitely emotions when it comes to certain foods. I want my grandchildren to think of me and remember me. That's how I do with my grandmother. And that's your childhood food.
No, it has nothing to do with my childhood food. It has nothing to do with my childhood food. I grew up, my first years were in Bnei Brak. Bnei Brak is not known for great food. Mm-hmm. I mean, Yerushalayim is not so much, you know, much better food here than in Yerushalayim than in Bnei Brak. I mean, it's been like this forever. And so, no, it's really a great food. It's amazing food. I mean, look, I like also Eastern food. I like Middle Eastern food. I'm not, you know, I like all kinds of food. Otherwise, I would be much skinnier. I enjoy food. But, you know, I've been spending God knows how many years in America. I mean, I don't like the American food. Their chips are horrible, their French fries are horrible. The only place that they sell good French fries, they have French fries, is in Belgium, for example. You know, the best French fries in the world, they have in Brussels. Not because I was born into it, you know. I came to Brussels, I ate the French fries, I loved it. You know, it has nothing to do with what I, you know, the way I grew up, you know. It has to do with, like, it's really good food. I mean, and you know what, there are 10,000 ways to make chont. Over there, they know how to make chont. Over here, you know, there are people in New York, Haredim, and they make you chont, and you come there and you say, "Oh, Rabbanu Shloilam, I would like not to eat chont. Let them give me a burger. You know how to do a burger."
It's the stew that people have on Shabbat because it's a slow cook food.
Do a burger better than chont. So, but it's the taste of it. It's not just what it is. Not every gefilte fish. The American gefilte fish, the ones we buy from the jars, are good for the cats. I mean, or for dogs. I mean, they are not good for human beings. It's not because, oh, I like a gefilte fish. It's because I can do the gefilte fish. You know, do you do the gefilte fish, the frozen gefilte fish that you in America, that you buy it in all the stores, in Borough Park, whatever. Or you go to the gefilte fish of the rabbits of Shemir Ramunim. It's my gefilte fish that, you know, that this gefilte fish is eaten by the angels in paradise, in heaven. You know what kind of... They know how to make gefilte fish. I mean, it's not like the gefilte... It's not, you know, all these things.
I'm thinking maybe at some point in your life you should do a culinary book. But, you know, you said to me before the book came out in English, it came out in German. And it was like a runaway bestseller in Germany.
Yeah, and it's already third edition. Third edition, and it's a Spiegel bestseller. It's like a New York Times bestseller. I think that people are interested in Jews. Jews is news. And for some people, the ultra-Orthodox Jews are seen as the authentic Jews, the Jews of the Bible, you know, for whatever reason. I mean, it's like, this is what you think, because you are dressed differently, you look differently, you can tell the...
Identifiable
Jews, you know, so they think this is the original Jews. I guess so. But, you know, but people really like Jews. I mean, read about Jews. I don't say they like Jews as a person. The anti-Semitism is rampant in the world, but they are very interested in Jews. I mean, even now, I mean, it's like the old thing, you know, you see the world, the anti-Semitism on the streets, marching in all Western worlds, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions together, marching for Palestine. They don't care about Palestine. They don't even know where Palestine is on the map. I mean, it's like, when I tell them, when I go on the street, I say I'm Palestinian, they think I am a Palestinian. Look, oh, I love you, you're very good. They don't know river or sea, which river or sea, because they hate the Jews. But the world is fascinated with the Jews, for better or worse. This has been, it's thousands of years old, it's not new. The world is fascinated with the Jews. You open the New York Times, the first news, for year after year after year, week after week, day after day, is what? Israel. You know, they have 330 million people in America, and I opened the New York Times the other day, you know, on the internet, 5 articles on the front page are about Israel. Hello, give me a break. There is a war in Israel, I know, but there is also a war in Ukraine, there is also a war in there, there are wars all over the world, there are people
it's
are dying.
It's an obsession.
There are people dying, and all over the world, there are famine all over the world. Why do you play again Palestinians? How many times? It's not the Palestinians that they care about, because they don't care about the Palestinians in Jordan or the Palestinians in Syria. So let all the Palestinians die. They don't care. They don't care about the kids. They don't care about anybody. But why do they care? Because the other side is Jews. So the world is fascinated with Jews. Everything to do with Jews, the world is fascinated. That's my explanation. The other explanation will be because it's a really good book.
Okay.
It's a simpler, but I am not supposed to blow my own horn. I'm not supposed to tell you how great the book is, because this is not for me to say. But yes, I mean, it got amazing reviews from the right to the left in Germany, and it's been a bestseller in Israel. It's been a bestseller in the Czech Republic. Basically, everything, everywhere it has been published so far, it's been a bestseller. So
and in Hebrew?
In Hebrew, also a bestseller. It was number one bestseller here in Israel. And
just to make a little order for my listeners who might not understand the nuances, they don't consider themselves Zion. Well, maybe there's a change. How did you see it there? Chapter where you said something, they were being protected, they were going somewhere, a funeral, something, they were going somewhere and they were being protected by Israeli soldiers or policemen who are Zionists, who they call Nazis. So how does that work?
I put it in the book. I mean, it's like one time we were like in the Shemir Munim, Rabbi, we went for Friday night, for Leil Shabbat, you know, Friday night. And the sons-in-law of the Rebbe asked me, so what did you find out? You know, I'm doing the food, you know, doing the meal. I said, I found out that you are the biggest Zionist in the world. And he looked at me and said, how can you say something like that? Don't you know in Shemir Munim we are the most anti-Zionist? Even in Me'ah Shearim we are the most anti-Zionist. Sit down, listen to me. You have Haredim here, you have Haredim in New York, you have Haredim in Antwerp, you have Haredim in Britain. Haredim in Britain, for example, in Manchester, in London. If they live, dressed as they are, outside of their neighborhoods, be it in Manchester, be it in London, be it in Antwerp, be it wherever it is, and they go out, I know what happens. You know, there are people, the kids told me, you know, like in Manchester and London, kids told me, you know, they go out of the neighborhood, somebody comes, you know, and takes the yarmulke, or somebody throws eggs at them, or whatever it is. And still the Haredim know they are hated, they know it's dangerous to live their little world, little neighborhoods, but they don't open their mouths, they don't demonstrate, they don't even admit to the anti-Semitism. You have to get it from the children to tell you there's anti-Semitism in those places. You know, the mature Haredim don't even say, they totally... Don't want to talk about it. And of course, you don't demonstrate. Here in Israel, you are doing the best you can imagine. You are doing here so well. look at this, Meir Shoharim, look at this. Look at the food you have here. Look at the look everything you have here. Right. You are doing amazingly well. You have the yeshivas, you have the koilim, you have the mikvahs, you have everybody. You go outside, nobody throws stones at you. You do whatever you want. You are succeeding. You are successful. You are growing in numbers. You are growing in funds. Influence. Every influence. You're gonna, and still you go on the street and demonstrate. Why? Who did anything wrong to you? Nobody. But you know here, in Yerushalayim, in Israel, you know, it's your country. It's not a goyim. The police are your brothers and sisters. You know that. So you go, let's take a demonstration. Let's have some fun. Let's demonstrate. Because you know, they're not going to throw stones at you. They're not going to kill you. And they're not going to arrest you for whatever you do. Why? Because they are your Jewish brother and sister, those Zionists. So you tell me, who is a bigger Zionist? You or me?
What was the answer to that?
And the guy says, well, I never thought about it, but you're right. You're probably right, Mr. Tome. I never thought about it, yes. I'm a Zionist. And then I interviewed the Rebbe, and he said to me, I don't tell you, I'm the biggest, and he said to me, I will never get out of Israel. I'm the biggest Zionist. I said to him, of course you're the biggest Zionist. There's no more Zionist than you. So it's a spiel, you know, brothers and sisters fight each other. It's normal, you know, demonstrated. But by the end of the day, even I, they are not supposed not only to talk to me because I'm not religious. I'm the one, Shanao Piresh, Kashem Kulam, the one who was one of them and left. I'm, according to their sayings, according to the Talmud also, Kashem Kulam is the worst on everybody.
Right.
So how come you welcome me? Because, you know, it's written, but it doesn't mean that we do everything the way it's written with a different explanation. Like, for example, I'm not supposed to have a cell phone and a smartphone. Of course I don't have. But excuse me, as they say to me, Tuvia, what's your WhatsApp number? I said, what do you mean, what's my WhatsApp number? How can you ask me a WhatsApp number? You told me you're not allowed to have a cell phone, smartphone.
Right.
How do you have a Niana's life computer? You know, how are you going to contact me with WhatsApp? She said to me, Reb Tuvia, no. No.
Of course.
I don't have on my right pocket, I have kosher phone. On my left pocket, I have a smartphone, I have iPhone. You know, so it's a different way. It's knowing that to, and this is a very Jewish thing, like you know, Prozvul and every other things, you know, that, you know, before Pesach, selling chametz to, like we sell zillions of dollars of chametz of all the country to one little Ahmad. I mean, it's like, hello, this is not a real sale.
But a wink and a nod to certain things to make them happen.
Yeah, that's what it is. So it's within Judaism, you know. Of course, you know, most of the Haredim have smartphones, but we are not supposed to say it.
No, they're opening up to the modern world. Yeah, I mean, slowly.
But still, you know, it's like, of course, I, if you ask me, I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are, WhatsApp, yes, of course I am.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different way. It works very well in Judaism. It works very well in Yiddish, you know.
Okay.
And that's the way it works.
So maybe not such a fair question to ask. Do you have a favorite group there of all? Because you really, you know, a lot of people just look and say the ultra-Orthodox or the Haredim. And there's so many nuances in there. Is there a particular group?
I like many of them. I mean, but the ones I probably connected more is because with the Toldos Aharon, the Rabaralach, who are known as the most, one of the most Haredim, known as strict, whatever it is. And that's because of the Rebbe. I mean, I really like the Rebbe. It's an amazing guy, the Rebbe.
Really?
I asked him what happens. I interviewed him and I asked him, Rebbe, what will happen if it's Yoini, Chiloini, you know,
secular
Zionist, comes to your shul, to the shul, what will you do? And he said to me, if he comes to fight me, what can I do? But if he doesn't come to fight me, what kind of question? There's an Analeiden. We are all Jews. You know, here is the guy, everybody says, boom, 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 boom. And I like him. I like him for his humanity, for his, we talked a lot about my great grandparents, you know, the Rebbes of the Radziner Rebbes, you know, because he studies the books. And it was amazing conversation, and I really like it. I mean, but I also like the Carliner, but he's a very, very funny guy. He's like
the Carliners, the ones who like to yell a lot? Yes.
No, the Carliners is the funniest kind of world. I mean, it's like, I mean, I spent like as much time with him. Even the Gabbai came and knocked on the door and he said, Rebbe, there are people waiting. He said, leave me alone. I'm finally laughing. I'm having a good time. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. So, yes, I like many of them, but, you know, yes.
I think you saw a side of them most of us never get to see. One, because of the language and because of what you were doing
there.
We live there. And you live there.
We live there, living there, you know, and telling the people, I am here with you. Remember, after the book came out in Hebrew, and when I went to one of the rabbis, I was there for Shabbos morning, and after the prayer, you know, everybody goes to the rabbi, say, good Shabbos, and I came also. And he says to me, listen, many journalists come here, and writers. When they come, they tell us they like us. And then they write their articles or their books, and it's all negative about us. You came here, you told us you like us. And now you published your book. And tell us that not only you like us, you also love us.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, but so no one should think that this is just like, you know, one big love story. I mean, in the book, you are critical, especially the certain conversations you have that you don't get answers for,
things that don't make sense. I said it, but at the same time, I put it, it's like, you know, there are a lot of things that don't make sense, no question about it, is that in no other society do people make sense. You know, I mean, just the point. I mean, it's like, you know, the Greta is one example, but many examples right. like this, you know, people follow a leader, you know, who makes total no sense, and they mm-hmm. just follow things, and they have no idea about anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like in New York, I mean, it's like walk on the street, I mean, people even like professors at university, right. I mean, they look to me like total idiots. I mean, it's like, I mean, I like the gender thing, because now I can, myself personally, I can go to a main restaurant, I can go to the ladies' toilet instead of the men's toilet because
that day you identified as a lady.
Because the ladies' toilet is much cleaner and stinkt nicht, it doesn't stink like the men's toilet, you know. So mm-hmm. and I walk in and I say, excuse me, this is the ladies' toilet. I'm sorry, I'm a lady. I mean, it's like I like it that I can go around and say that I'm a lady. I mean, I like to enjoy the Michigan of the modern world, but it's a modern world, it's totally Michigan. I mean, it's like So even though I do the criticism, I said it's not a propaganda book, and I do criticize quite a few aspects of that, but in the book also I say they are not the only one to criticize for that, and let's not have a double standards. Let's not have a double standards. And
well, I think you've done that in all your books, to really try and show both sides and let the reader figure it out for themselves.
But let's be honest, you know, it's mm-hmm. like I report what I see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I saw was amazingly warm and amazingly nice, and I wrote it.
Tovia Tannenbaum and his new book in English, Careful, Beauty's Ahead, My Year with the Ultra-Orthodox. Thank you so much once again.
Thank you so much, Eve. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Always. Take care, everyone. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. I hope wherever you are well. You're probably not getting to see the miracles that we got to see a couple days ago, but I hope for your sake that you are. Take care, everyone, and goodbye for now.